Welcome to Invisible Church, the podcast of Bible class at St. Paul's Lutheran Church in New Ulm, Minnesota. I'm Pastor Tim Smith. Good evening. For those of you who can read, the aim of Genesis 36 first of all, it delivers to us the history of the people of Edom. Our aim this evening is to learn how God cared for Esau, Jacob's brother, and provided for his descendants, giving them, ample opportunity for a contact with the gospel. Although we will see that, and perhaps remember that in a couple of cases, they didn't do anything with that, because one of the descendants of Esau is Amalek and the Amalekites. And we'll talk about some of those run-ins with Israel and how the Edomites in general did not let Israel through their land when it came to the end of the Exodus and so forth. But we will see some positive things in this section. So Genesis 36 is the ninth account in Genesis of the 10. The tenth and longest is coming up, the account of Jacob, which is really the account of his son Joseph, from our perspective. This is about Esau and his descendants, and I think we're just going to jump right into the text. We're also going to find out some things that coordinate Esau and the land of Edom, or Seir as it's also called, with the story of Job. And that's maybe going to be the most interesting for us, are to see those things that place the story of Job probably at about this time, certainly in this place, and maybe with some of these very people. So, this is the account of the family line of Esau, that is Edom. Esau took his wives from the women of Canaan: Ada, daughter of Elon the Hittite; Oholibamah, daughter of Anah; and granddaughter of Zibeon the Hivite. That's a mistranslation. I'm going to come back to that. Also, Basemath, daughter of Ishmael and sister of Nebaioth. So I mentioned that daughter of Anah, granddaughter of Zibeon. It really should be daughter of Anah and daughter of Zibeon. And I'm going to talk about that. Those are both men's names, and I'm going to talk about what that means a little bit later, along with some comments from some Jewish commentaries and also from Luther. But right now, continuing with verses 4 and 5. Ada bore Eliphaz to Esau. Do you remember the name of Eliphaz? In Job. Eliphaz the Temanite is in the book of Job. This is not that Eliphaz. But this is, I'm going to call it a family name. And that's going to be where we're going to draw the comparison. We now have a family name into the book of Job. Thank you, Pastor Shark. So Eliphaz to Esau: Basemath bore Reuel, and Oholibamah bore Jeush, Jalam, and Korah. These were the sons of Esau who were born to him in Canaan. We're going to get this list three times. So I hope you like these names, because we're going to come across them more than once, just to be sure. But notice also, Basemath bears a boy named Reuel. And where have we seen that name before? This is the other name for Moses' own father-in-law, Jethro. He is Reuel. That's not this guy, but it's a family name. And there is a family tie between the Edomites and the Midianites. Not a very polite one, because we're going to see them going to war in this chapter. But there is a family connection. So just to clear this up, Esau's three lines. Esau has three wives. Earlier in another chapter, I forget if it was 24 or where I went through this earlier with you, Esau's wives have a total of six names. Oholibamah in our chapter is earlier called Judith. Judith means gem or something like that. And Judah has the same basis for his name. By the way, the languages. Western Semitic, Northwest Semitic, the language of the Hebrew language family, contains Hebrew, Aramaic, Moabite, Edomite, Ammonite. It has affinities with the Philistine language, Ugaritic, and another one that's escaping me, but that's okay. All of these are similar languages. Aramaic is to Hebrew what English is to German. But Edomite is to Hebrew what American English is to Australian. Okay? They're very, very much more similar. And then you've got, besides Edomite, Moabite and Ammonite are to Hebrew as American English is to, say, a Canadian and maybe British or something like that. So some different nouns. What do you call a truck in Great Britain?
A lorry.
A lorry. But you can get it from context, right? So there are some things like that. In Canada, they have one kind of football. In America, we have the real kind of football. Things like that. It's a podcast. Oholibama is Judith. It appears to be the same girl. Not that he had six wives, but that he had three, and they have more than one name. The name Basemath means something like a flower of some kind, rose or iris or whatever. And you'll see that one of his wives in this chapter is called Basemath. She had been named Miss Sickly, which is Mahalath. So Sickly, or Sikipu, whatever he was calling her as her nickname, her real name appears to be Basemath. And then Ada also seems to have the nickname of flower or lily or rose or whatever. So you have some common names here. A couple of the girls share a nickname and a real name, so maybe Esau switches them. That's why he does that. But it's Oholibama, who is also called Judith, who is the mother of Jeush, Jalam, or Ja'alam, and Korah, and Basemath, who is also Mahalath, has Reuel, and Ada, who is also Basemath, has Eliphaz. Clear as mud? Then let's go on. Very good, very good. Okay. Dave, I'm going to let you finish writing whatever you're writing there and just making the chart. So Esau, took his wives and sons and daughters, and all the members of his household, as well as his livestock, and all his other animals, and all the goods he had acquired in Canaan, and moved. So he packs up everything and moved to a land some distance from his brother Jacob. By the way, in every single chapter of the Bible that is dedicated to genealogy, there is, without exception, always a story somewhere. Might be a little story, a little verse. 1 Chronicles 4, in that chapter, it's, remember about 15 years ago he had this big deal about the prayer of Jabez? That's one verse. But every chapter of Chronicles, that's genealogy, has a story verse. And this one actually has a couple. This is one of them, the one that Esau moved. Later on, one of the grandsons is going to discover a hot springs. There's some other things going on. There's a war. There are cities being built, probably tent cities, not walled cities, but we'll come to that. So verse 7, their possessions were too great for them to remain together. The land where they were staying could not support them both because of their livestock. The they, by the way, is Jacob and Esau. So Esau, that is Edom, settled in the hill country of Seir. Seir was a guy. We're going to find out that he is Seir the Horite. He is the father of the chieftains of the area, or the grandfather, and we're going to find out that this is named after him. As they often did, the land gets named after the man. After all, Jacob himself is the namesake of the land of Israel, isn't he? So this is the account, and here's where we have the Toledot. This is the account of the family line of Esau, the father of the Edomites, in the hill country of Seir. Yes?
When did Esau get
They evidently they called him that right away because Edom means red, and that's how he came out. Remember, he came out red. How did I describe him? Like a hairy orangutan. So both hairy and red at the same time. So they gave Esau two names too. Seems to have had both names for a long time. Men in my family almost all have two names, a nickname and a regular name, a used name. My brother, almost universally within my family, you know, his name is Dan, but everybody calls him Dexter. My cousin Greg is also called Zero. My uncle, that was his number as a, when he was a catcher playing baseball, was Zero, so we called him Zero. And Uncle Dave is often called Ben. It just goes on and on and on and on. And now I have a son named Ben Dave, Benjamin David. See, those things echo back into the family again afterwards. So, talking about the hill country of Seir, my initials as a child, and they still are TJ. And my cousin Diane, who is 1 year, year and a half older than me, had trouble saying TJ when she was a little toddler girl and I was a little toddler boy, and she called me Tej. And that stuck. So in my family, I'm still known as Tej. T-E-E-J. You don't have to write that down for extra credit, Mr. Wolf. Okay, yeah. And now I've said that publicly on a podcast. So the hill country of Seir, the slopes east of Edom, not east of Eden, but east of Edom, that border on the desert are actually known for their forests, their springs, many springs, including some hot springs, and for forests of short pine trees and other tough little hardy trees. And the region is the source of much, I think I say most there, much, I'll say much, of the frankincense and myrrh of the Bible. There's actually more of it in down in the Saudi Arabian Peninsula, but this area known for some of it too. And there's a frankincense trail where the camels would follow they're called trilithes, which of course, trilith, you'd expect there to be how many stones? Yeah, but there are four. It's three stones and a fourth one on top. It's called a trilith though. And that's the markers on the frankincense trail, these trilithes here and there. You can just see the next one in the distance and keep going with your camel. This is where we are though. So this is the southern end of the Dead Sea. This is the Araba down below it. And some cities, Bozra and Sela and Punon, are there on the east side. And Esau, he was about here, where he met with Jacob and so forth, and he moves to here, in the highlands, in the rocky highlands. And I'm going to show you some pictures of why it was actually nicer than where he was. This is a modern a geographical picture, not the way it was topographically in their time, but the way it kind of looks today. But we're going to go on with verse 10 here. These are the names of Esau's sons. Remember, I said we've been through this already once. Well, here we go again. Eliphaz, the son of Esau's wife, Ada, and Reuel, the son of Esau's wife, Basemath. The sons of Eliphaz now, Teman, there's that name from Job, Omar, Zepho, not the Marx brother, by the way, but there's Zepho, Gatam, and Kenaz. Esau's son Eliphaz also had a concubine named Timnah who bore him Amalek. These were grandsons of Esau's wife, Ada. We've got to get back to the relationship of Ada and some of these individuals, but Timnah also appears to not only to have been a concubine, but maybe also either a widow or an orphan. When you put everything together in the chapter, she falls out of the story somehow and gets put back in. So it's like she got dropped and lifted back up like an orphan. But it's a tough one to kind of figure out. But going back to Amalek there in verse 12, this Amalek is the ancestor of all the Amalekites, or Amalekites if you want to say, who were a thorn in Israel's side until the last one was killed, Haman the Agagite. I'm going to come back to him in a little bit. There is a quote about Amalek in your notes by Luther, but I'm not going to read it now. I'm going to just commit that to your own perusal later on as you have your ice cream later on this evening. By the way, have ice cream later on this evening. So but about the Amalekites, five things. They attacked Israel at least twice during the Exodus. Once is in the book of Exodus, and once is later. And I forget if, I think it's in Numbers, but it could be in Deuteronomy. But later in the Exodus, they attacked. They kept joining forces with other people like the Ammonites, and they would attack Israel. They weren't big enough to attack by themselves. Then, during the days of the Judges, they fought along with the Moabites and others against the little city of Jericho at that time, after Israel had taken Jericho. And they harassed Israel in the days of the Judges in several different places. So the Amalekites keep coming back and coming back and coming back. And it's like they're getting stronger and Israel's getting weaker in the days of the Judges. Well, what happens after the days of the Judges? Israel's no longer ruled by judges. They're now ruled by a king. And they're finally defeated by Saul. In fact, one Amalekite takes credit for in the beginning of 2 Samuel for killing Saul. That's a curious story because we see Saul at the end of 1 Samuel falling on his own sword to kill himself, right? And then this Amalekite comes along and says, no, I killed him. Well, what had David said all along every time he had an opportunity to kill Saul? David said, I can't. Why not? He's the Lord's anointed. I can't raise my hand against the Lord's anointed. So along comes this Amalekite that says, hey, I killed Saul. And what does David say they should do with the Amalekite? Kill him. He raised his hand against the Lord's anointed. That's not what the Amalekite thought was coming. So if he lied about killing Saul, it did not do him a lot of good. Fascinating question there is, did he lie? Did he find Saul in the throes of almost being dead and run him through? Or did he just lie about it? I got to leave that one sit there. Finally, they are subdued by the Simeonites. That kind of begins in the days of the Judges and continues later. One of the only things the Simeonites are known for, really, is that they put down much of the Amalekite threat that was going on. And then the last Amalekite is mentioned in the Bible is Haman in Esther, throughout the book of Esther, from Esther chapter 3 to chapter 9. Who is this Haman?
Isn't that the one that built the...
Yeah, he is. He built the whatever it was. The Hebrew word is eitz, which just means lumber. He built the stick. Is it a gallows? What is it? We translate usually gallows to hang. Because if it wasn't, if it was just a pole, like I think the Jehovah's Witnesses like to pretend that everything that we think is a cross is actually a torture stake. But if that was a 100-foot tall torture stake, how'd they get him up there, you know, to impale him? So probably it was a gallows and they had some kind of an ingenious, just a rope over a post, I suppose, would pull the, and he ends up on it. Yeah, so Haman, he's called an Agagite, but Agag, by the way, that's really hard to say. Don't try. You'll just hurt yourself. And just don't say Agagite. But Agag is one of the descendants of Amalek, so that he's the last Amalekite in the Bible, is Haman. Now the sons of Reuel, we have Nahath, Zerah, Shammah, and Mitzah. They were grandsons of Esau's wife, Basemath. And the sons of Esau's wife, Aholibamah, daughter of Anah, and granddaughter of Zibeon. Again, it's daughter of Anah, daughter of Zibeon, whom she bore to Esau, are Jeush, Jalam, or Ja'alam. There's sometimes an extra A in there. And Korah, not the Korah of the Exodus, but a different guy. I want to comment about this. The phrase, Aholibamah, daughter of Anah, I've retranslated daughter of Zibeon. Luther talks about this for, I think, 5 or 6 pages because of commentaries by the Jews that assign this woman, Aholibamah, to be the daughter of an incestual relationship. And they're kind of creative about it. And Luther says, who are you guys to be casting stones about about incest. Look at your own family. And I want to point out what I have at the bottom of the screen there. Both Anah and Zibeon, her fathers, are brothers. They're not father and son in the text. They're actually brothers, the sons of Seir the Horite, down in verse 20, later in the chapter. So the two conflicting stories that at least Luther uncovers in, I don't know if this is in the Mishnah or where it is, but two conflicting stories. Zibeon, an ungodly man, the story goes, slept with the wife of his father Seir to beget Anah, who then was both his son and his brother. Do you see, that does justice to the text by making Zibeon and Anah brothers, but it insists that he had to have been, it has to have been an incestual relationship. The second conflicting story is this, or Zibeon defiled his daughter-in-law, the wife of his son Anah, making Oholibamah an incestuous woman. Either way, they want to make Oholibamah an unmarriable woman, but neither story has any foundation. For one thing, although the moral law doesn't exist yet, that comes to Moses on Mount Sinai, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are understand clean and unclean, what is moral, what is amoral. And I don't think that Esau would have married an unmarriable girl. He does pick his wives from the Canaanites, from the Hittites and so forth, but they are at least marriageable. They are at least able to be wives for him. So if he had known about this, he wouldn't have done it. And Luther, the rabbis are simply casting their own stones at the Edomites with these stories, since their own history is littered with these sins. Reuben, Judah, not to mention Amnon, the son of David, who raped his own half-sister. So there are plenty of examples in Israel. Israel doesn't have to assign it to other people. 2 monkey wrenches here. One of them. Another Anah is mentioned later in the chapter. Are you just bewildered yet? Okay, well, keep with it. Another Anah is the son of Zibeon, this brother of Anah. But he is distinguished from his uncle by being called the Anah who discovered the hot springs. We'll talk about that. There's one other thing. I'm forgetting what it is. It doesn't make, I'll just go on here, but another monkey wrench, actually. But I'm just going to continue with this. The more likely story, Anah, Oholibamah's father, died when she was still young. That would kind of take care of everything. Her mother remarried, and this man, Zibeon, who is the brother, and Levirate law, right? Took her to be his own daughter. So she was held up honorably to have had two fathers, both of them kings or chieftains of the Edomites. So it's not that she's a terrible, unmarriageable daughter of incest, but that she's the honorable daughter of not one king, but two. And then Zibeon names one of his sons after the first husband, Anah. And so that takes care of everything. And would we agree, puts the best construction on everything? Yeah, that's Luther teaching us how to be Christian, and read this correctly.